And welcome to the third episode of Tapped. This is Gretel. I'll be your host today. And with me is Desiree Stoller. She is an amazing woman of DC, and so I've known her many years since college. She's gone on to do many a great thing. And I had her on today because, speaking of Tapped and ideas that make it out into the ether and get realized, Desiree is one of those people who actually acted on one of those ideas and made something of it. So Desiree, tell me a little about your story, your time in business school, and when idea finally came into fruition for you.
Well, Gretel, thank you for having me. I can't tell you what an honor it is to be on Tapped. And this is a story that I have told many a time, but it's the first time I'm telling it to a friend. So I will give you the juicy details, and hopefully you and your listeners enjoy. You know, you said I'm from DC, but before I went to grad school in Boston, I had lived in Los Angeles and Tampa for a while. So I was not well-versed on wearing wool clothing. And this is 2013. I've just moved to Boston. We're having the polar vortex winter. It's very cold. And I had received a bunch of sweaters from my sister. And lo and behold, put them into the washer, the dryer. And then it was only when they were in the dryer for about 30 minutes that I realized, huh, I'm not sure wool and cashmere belong in the dryer. I ran upstairs, and most of them had gone from a size medium or small to a couple sizes smaller. And I know at this point most people would take the sweaters, lament that they lost them, that they shrank, and then just put them in the bottom of their closet, or they'd give them to a friend, or put them on their dog, maybe even take it down to Goodwill. Well, I was embarrassed because those sweaters were from my younger sister, and so I jumped online, and I thought, well, it's 2013. I'm pretty sure I can find something on Google, and it'll redirect me to Amazon, and I'll purchase it, and it'll arrive in 2 days, and life will be well. But there was not a single commercial product. And I sat there, and I thought, well, maybe someone's come up with a home remedy. We have all these really smart people in the world. I'll just do it yourself it, you know, DIY. And the most popular one was put it in warm water, soak it for a while, stretch it, put it back on, you're great. So I did that with a really beautiful cashmere. It was this brown sweater. It worked. I put that in quotes. It worked. And then I went to class at Harvard Business School. And over the course of the day, that sweater began to shrink to the point where it was a crop top. And my accounting professor comes up to me after class, and he says, in the kindest way you can, Desiree, we have a very casual dress policy here at HBS, but what you're wearing is a little too casual. And the whole time I've been trying to tug it down as he's talking to me, and I said, I'm so sorry, this will never happen again. I grabbed a jacket from a friend, and then that night I said, this is ridiculous. It's 2013, going on 2014, there should be a solution. At some point, I'm going to do this. And it was definitely back in my mind, at some point we'll do this. It then occurred to me, HBS was going to give us $5,000 to start a microbusiness, and I said, huh. On my team is a physicist, a product developer, someone who did risk management, a consultant, they're always good for something. I'm pretty sure we can think of something. And I pitched to them, let's unshrink wool clothing. And they said, oh, do you have a potential solution in mind? I said, no, I just know that everything else doesn't work. And they said, do you have a chemistry degree? And I said, oh, no, my background's media and communications and research. And they said, okay, then why are we doing this? And I said, well, when I was trying to find my solution, I noticed that there were millions of websites and pages devoted to people trying to fix this. So I think there's a market here. Let's just try. We got back to school early 2014. Mad scientists mode commenced. We spent 2 months in our dorm room trying out different solutions, concentrations, soaking times. And within 2 months, we had something we thought worked. We bottled it up. It worked well enough for our classmates. We did really well in the school projects. We got third place out of 150 teams, and that was pretty much the end of it. We got an A in the course. I put that also in quotes, A. There are no such thing as grades at HPS, but we did well. And we put cases of the product into our closets and called it a day. The few people that knew about it were super happy we unshrank their garments, but no one else really knew about this. So when I got back to school in the fall, after spending the summer in Seattle, interning for Microsoft, thinking I was going to go back into product development and product marketing, I got a call from the Grommet, and they said they were willing to feature us. Sidebar for all of you innovators and entrepreneurs out there, the Grommet is a third-party launch platform for innovative products. Mm. So they said, we're going to give you one day, show your story, launch you. We think we'll sell 200 units in a month. That's really great. See you on September 17th, 2014. Now, the reason why I've memorized that date is because it forever changed my life. We launched on that date, and in the middle of class, I proceeded to get a series of phone calls. As soon as class ended, I called back, and they said, we sold out of those 200 units in less than an hour, and we oversold you, and we need about 2,000 units by Tuesday. This was Friday. We had no additional inventory, and so that was the first realization that we had a true market to sell the product and that we needed to actually start a business.
Amazing. And the dream that, like, many people think about all the time. So you're in class and you walk out and you realize you have to find stock somewhere. And as I know, like, you were in the middle of launching something bigger than that, having filled out a couple of surveys and watched this grow online from afar. So what did you do?
One of the things that people assume that a lot of businesses are ready to do is to go big. And by and large, you have to iterate and to incrementally grow as it makes sense. And so when we launched in the Grommet, realized that people cared about the product, we had nothing really built out. I had no marketing collateral. I had no processes for reaching out to different retailers. We didn't have a supply chain built out. We certainly had no manufacturer lined up to make our product. The first few weeks, we were literally filling, bottling, labeling all of our products in our kitchen, in our bathtub. And so that was something that built up over time. And one of the big questions that people said to me was, well, how did you actually pay for all of this? At the outset, the three of us felt very committed about the product and what it could do. And so we put in a nominal amount of money just so that we could actually have the working capital to buy most of our components for the inventory. But we were a revenue-first company, so most everything that we purchased was within the budget of what is it that we're actually making and bringing in. But I will tell you that launching the business and actually starting it was done with just $5,000 that HBS gave to us, and most of that was poured into R&D and the initial groundwork for intellectual property. The work that we did in the fall, most of that money went towards literally the components, the labels, the bottles, the caps, making sure that we could get our product out in pallets to the key places that it needed to go. And from a marketing or advertising perspective, we barely spent anything. The only money that we put towards any sort of consumer engagement, consumer awareness was the website. And everything else was done on, I can't even call it a shoestring budget. We couldn't even afford a shoestring. So I jumped online and created a Twitter profile for Untrinket, which sounds basic. Everyone has a Twitter page. But what I realized very quickly was that if I did a search for shrink or sweater or dryer or even an angry emoticon, I could find people who were talking about this real time, that they needed, they had a context for needing Untrinket. And so I would direct message them or even publicly reply to them and say, hey, I saw that you just shrank your mother's sweater by accident. You should probably check out Untrinket. Or someone showed a picture of their sweater going up 3 inches on their belly and saying, well, this is no longer appropriate. I'll have to throw it away. And I'd say, no, you don't have to throw this into the pile. You can actually unshrink it. And so I started to go back and forth with people. And for a good number of people, we would send them the bottle for free. But a lot of people just said, oh, my God, can't believe this is available. Jumping on Amazon right now, going to purchase it. The reason why that worked out was not only were we open to having a direct line of communication with our customers, and it cost only my time, And as a student, it's not as though the opportunity cost was a salary. But at some point, I reached out to a woman who purchased the bottle, used it, loved it, and then told her niece, who was a Today Show producer, that they had to feature it on the show. And so it's literally, I guess it's 5 months after we had that miracle day on the grommet, and I receive an email from the Today Show saying, hey, we want to have you on the fourth hour with Kathleen Hoda. We think this would be an amazing sweater saver. It's a winter wonder, as we want to call it. And can you ship us 3 pristine bottles and a little bit of your marketing collateral in 48 hours? We'll get it on the Friday show. And I literally, we were showcased for 30 seconds, but 30 seconds of Kathy Lee and Hoda holding our bottle and talking about how amazing it was enough to really kickstart the business full throttle. It gave us a lot of legitimacy. It put us on the radar of Bed Bath & Beyond. And frankly, I'm convinced it accelerated our consideration for Shark Tank. And so I would say to most people that by all means, you can hire a PR agency, you can pour a lot of money into advertising, and particularly if it's a local business, that might make sense. But if you have a consumer product that's solving a very specific need, you simply need to make sure that you are reaching people at the moment when they have that need, and you are putting it on the radar of people who could potentially have a big influence on your awareness.
And then, so you're in the middle of pulling all these things together. You're still in school, by the way, right?
Oh, yeah. You know, I supposedly a student. I will say that right after the grommet, I ran student support services and said, look, I know I signed up for 6 courses, but I need to scale that back down to 3, and I would like to have 2 other courses that are independent study, and I plan to study retailing and exit strategies. And by the way, I know I'm past the ad drop deadline, but can we make this work? Smiles. And they said, of course not. You know the rules. And I said, well, just so that we're fully aware here, we are the result of the micro business project that you had students do last year. So if we're successful, it looks really great for you. Huh. Okay, we'll get back to you. And they made it work.
It's amazing what a smile and a success story will do, right?
Pulls off miracles, yes.
But as you're saying, like, it was one success story to the next success story to the next success story. And then you end up on Shark Tank.
Yes, and in between all those success stories, because I don't want to make it seem like it was just this nice glide from success platform to success platform, there was a lot of hard work and hard decisions that happened in the second semester of my second year at Harvard Business School. I was, and still am, married at the time. I was still very interested in making sure that I had a full rounded educational experience at a school that cost a lot of money and was a unique opportunity. And I also wanted to give this business my all. And it just so happened that during spring break, when everyone else was on a beach or on a mountain somewhere, I was sending boxes to people for On Trinket and doing a bunch of customer service and laying the groundwork for what we hoped to do in the fall in terms of pitching to investors. And I said, well, I think we're ready for Shark Tank. I know that they've had some bigger businesses as of late, but at their core, they're all about the American dream from the small business perspective. And I think that we have a great story, and it's certainly a useful product with mass appeal. I'm going to apply. And I sent off a cutesy email to them. And after pressing send, I said, you know, maybe we'll be on season 9. A week later, I got a phone call from 310 number, and I knew that was Culver City area, and I let it go to voicemail. And then when I listened to it, and I heard that it was a producer from Shark Tank saying that they wanted to fast track us for season 8, I literally started screaming, and the rest is history. During that semester, I basically had some hard choices and some hard work to do. One, I basically eliminated all of my time to just casework, spending time with my husband and practicing for Shark Tank, or prepping for Shark Tank, I should say. And then Nate, who was my co-founder at the time, he and I practiced pitching on Shark Tank, negotiating on Shark Tank, being nimble as we dealt with the different sharks. We practiced that probably 20 hours a week. He downloaded all of the episodes between seasons 3 through season 6 because we knew that those were the seasons of Mark Cuban, and we wanted to make sure that we had the latest judges in front of us, and we would watch the episodes, pause, practice what we wanted to say in between the different pauses, figure out who should be responding. We did a bunch of research on who was on there in terms of the team, their age, their product, how much they asked for, what were the questions they received. We created an Excel database of all of the different things we should think about. And by the time I got on the plane for Los Angeles, I had probably sacrificed the typical HBS experience, but I also knew that there was nothing that could come up on that stage with those judges that I should not expect. And I was both excited and determined to represent myself, the products, my family, the business as best I could.
So you get on that plane, you're on your way to Shark Tank, and you land, and then what happens?
Everything happens and nothing happens. They have that process down to a science. By the time we were arriving for season 7, everything had been mapped out very carefully because they had basically seen every possible scenario when it comes to founders and what could go right and wrong. We were all in a hotel together. We were given instructions not to talk to one another. Of course, no one obeyed that at all. Everyone knew everyone about everything, everyone else's product by the end of it. And certainly we were looking out to see if people were successful or not. But you get a couple days of practice with the producers, and they make slight tweaks based off of what they think will be appealing to the audience. And then they say, you're going to sit in your hotel, and sometime in the next 96 hours, we'll let you know if you're pitching. And once we do call you, we'll tell you 24 hours in advance who your sharks are. And then once you're on set, you will pitch as long as it takes. There will be no bathroom breaks. There will be no opportunities to call a friend. Literally from the beginning to the end, you will be in front of the sharks. They won't know anything about you. So good luck. And in between there, you have what seemed to be many emergencies. They were letting the women know that we couldn't have mineral makeup and because it wasn't showing up well on screen. And so you had people rushing out to buy the correct makeup. And you had people who something went wrong with the batch of cookies that they were going to present, as they were trying to recreate them in the hotel kitchen. But in our case, we just focused on getting enough sleep and keeping each other loose. So the day of our filming, we were the second team to go on Shark Tank, and the first guy in front of us absolutely bombed. The phrase I will never forget is Kevin O'Leary, Mr. Wonderful, saying to the guy, take it out back and shoot it. And Nate and I turned to each other and we said, oh my gosh, is this...
Could you watch him pitch before you...
We could watch him pitch. We could watch him flame out and just say to ourselves, oh, we hope that isn't us, and how horrific for him. We said to ourselves, is this the season 7 approach, that they're going to be difficult with everyone and only one or two businesses will get an actual deal? Or is this simply representative of the fact that he probably needed to work on his business more? We didn't know, so we decided to be ourselves and to go out there and know that we had a good business. And if you hear a baby in the background, that's my 9-month-old son upset because his pacifier is falling out.
So, I will. Thanks for joining us today.
Yes, we love you. We got on set and... No one tells you this, but they need to spend at least 2 minutes readjusting the lights and the sound for your particular business and to make sure that everything's ready to go for the next 2 hours or so. And so you just stand there in front of the sharks, assessing them looking at you, them trying to figure out, is this someone I want to do a business with or not? And Nate and I had practiced our power pose, and by the time they said, okay, go, off on the left, we just ran into it. We did the pitch. It went flawlessly. And then something I could have never anticipated, but in hindsight, it makes perfect sense. They all started asking questions at the same exact time. And there was a level of impatience and urgency about it that completely threw me off. And I realized, wow, these are people who are wealthy in their own respect, who are used to having answers given to them right away. They're trying to figure out as quickly as possible if you're worthy of their time and their money, and they're trying to beat out the other four sharks that are right next to them. And I was deeply concerned that in my rush to answer all of them, I wasn't going to give anyone the answer they wanted, and that very quickly they were going to see through us and decide that we were too early or not good enough and kick us off the set. And so I took a step back and I said, well, look, you've practiced most all the questions they could ask very well. You also just know your business darn well. So why don't you answer the question that most appeals to you and go from there? Damon had asked a question that I liked the most, and so I turned my attention to him and simply pretended I hadn't heard anyone else. And I said, Damon, that's a great question. Let me talk about that. Then in that instance, I thought, okay, either someone's going to be really upset that I ignored them, or they're going to ask a follow-up question to what I just said. And if they do the latter, then this is going to be a very, very good 2 hours. They did the latter. So it ended up becoming this wonderful waterfall experience where each question, we get a different question, that all of which were in alignment with what I wanted to say about the company and the product and where we were going next. And Nate and I had practiced so much that we were playing off of one another and really seemed in sync. And for those of you who have seen the episode, it was season 7, episode 8, there's a moment in which Kevin O'Leary asks, who's the CEO? And we did not practice this moment, but I raised my hand and Nate pointed to me at the exact same moment. And they were blown away by how connected we seemed, how sure-footed we were that I was the CEO, and the fact that I, the black female, was the CEO and not the tall, white, clean-cut guy. And so you could see them move around their chairs like, oh, this is interesting. Let's dive into this more. And from there, I could tell that it was no longer adversarial. There was a trust in the room. They were interested in learning more simply so that they could make the best, the offer that made the most sense. And by the time we got to the actual negotiation, and it kicked off with Kevin O'Leary offering us, of course, a royalty deal, he offered us an equity deal, but one that did not include a royalty kickback. And that's when I knew we were doing well, because he wanted to jump into the fray without having to try to take some of our money off the back end. And so we ended up with a deal with Mark Cuban, walked away very pleased, and it is to this day one of the proudest moments of my life.
I got to watch that episode, and I know it aired the night of the Paris attack.
Yes, it did.
And just, you know, a lot happening in the world at once. But, you know, amidst the tragedy, seeing your glowing face was an amazing moment for me personally, but obviously also allows you to think about all the things that are really important in this world. And so I know you have then continued to multitask in your life, being a mom, a mother, a businesswoman. And so what has that, you know, but that was all from one thought of, I'm going to do this idea, and it has led you down a path that you could never have imagined.
Exactly.
So what do you feel in the sense of, I am choosing to do this, and that is what matters most?
Mm. I'm glad you brought up the Paris attacks, because that was something that gets forgotten in the shuffle for a lot of people. And to this day, when it's casually mentioned or seriously mentioned in news media, and they simply say that the attacks back in 2015, I'm one of the few people that remembers the exact time, the exact day, the exact date. And that's because it also coincided with what was supposed to be one of the most important nights of our business's life, which was the airing of Shark Tank. And I had spent 2 weeks preparing for making sure that we had inventory there. I had actually had an interaction, but I simply reached out to Jeff Bezos to see if he could help us get our inventory in time for the Shark Tank airing, and it worked out. And I was thinking that everything was about this airing, and then literally that evening, the news report started to come in about Paris, and it put everything else into perspective. One of the biggest things that I took away from that whole experience was that night when I was thinking of, I mean, the magnitude of that event was so far reaching. At the time that it was unfolding, I was receiving Instagram posts and tweets and Facebook messages and phone calls and texts from friends all over the nation who were supporting us. My family was upstairs hosting a party with a bunch of people from the Virginia area, as well for the DC and the Richmond area. And so I, regardless of the outcome of the night, I had already felt as though I was one of the most loved people, and I felt particularly blessed that I was in the safety of my home, watching myself on screen, having this wonderful pinnacle moment, and very cognizant of the fact that for many other people, that was not the certainly not the case, and it was a devastating night. What I have told a lot of people was that Shark Tank gave me a great deal of perspective. Going into that evening, I was being supported not just by my family, but within my family, my mother-in-law, who was had recently been diagnosed with ALS. And a lot of people told me in the run-up to Shark Tank, even shortly thereafter, a lot of questions I got were along the lines of, weren't you so nervous? How could you possibly go on that show? I can't imagine ever doing that. There's so much high pressure. And I have said to people then and since that the number one thing that you should care about in your life is your family. And surely that a close second to that is your health. And if those two things are okay, then everything else you should take with a grain of salt, that it's really not the end all and be all. Yeah, that's also Will playing with the noisiest toy he has in his possession. And so I wasn't nervous when I walked on that set. I said to myself, I can walk down this aisle in between the fish and the sharks, and I can walk on my own volition. I can speak on my own. I can talk about a business that I am passionate about, a product that makes me excited to share with people. And all I have to do is really speak about myself. If they don't like it, they don't like it. But at least I made it this far. It has made everything thereafter that much easier when I have to pitch in front of people, when I have to present, if I have a large group of people who are counting me on for something, if there's something with an urgent deadline. Because Shark Tank had so much built up into it, it has made everything thereafter seem as though it's just not as intense. And so I would tell people, I would tell you as a listener, push yourself to do something that absolutely frightens you. The legal packet for Shark Tank is literally as thick as a binder, and you basically sign away your life and your image and representation until perpetuity. And the idea that we could bomb and they could replay that for years on end, not just in the United States, but globally, was a little bit unnerving. But I said to myself, to not take this opportunity means that I am not willing to push myself as far and as high as I can possibly go. And you'd be surprised the good that comes out of challenging yourself to the max.
Wow. Desiree, I mean, I think that can speak to anything in life, right? And I think we all walk around with thoughts and hopes and wishes, but also like positive things that happen to you. And I think, you know, you never know when that'll snowball into something bigger, and you're living proof of that. So thank you, Desiree. And that wraps up part one of our conversation. We just had so much to talk about that we had to turn this into a two-parter. Be sure to check out the next part of our conversation with entrepreneur and Shark Tank survivor, Desiree, who also happens to be a fellow film fan. We'll be talking about the new superhero movie that everyone is hyped about, Black Panther. Until then, be sure to follow us at Tapped Pod on Facebook and Twitter.